Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, September 3rd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. That book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and used it to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. You can get access to it absolutely free. Click the link, print it off, download it, or download it and print it off and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that process, or called in with powerful testimonials about the work. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often, because that often leads to comments, questions, testimonials, answers, refutations, interesting topics of suggestions, etc. And if you have any of those, you can call us at 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1 on your phone, and it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a comment, discussion, etc. Alternatively, you can email us. You can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And when you do that, we will address your comments or questions to the best of our ability, and then it'll be available in the archives. If you aren't able to call in live, send us an email, and we will do what we can to discuss your comments and questions, and they will be available in the archives. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 246th day of the year. The lesson today simply reads, "To love my Father is to love his Son." The commentary reads, "Let me not think that I can find the way to God if I have hatred in my heart. Let me not try to hurt any of the Creator's offspring and then think that I can know the Creator or my true self. Let me not fail to recognize my true self and still believe that my awareness can contain awareness of the Creator, or that my mind can conceive of all of the love that the Creator has for me as an offspring, and all of the love which I return to the Creator. I will accept the way that you choose me to come to you, Creator, for in that I will succeed because it is your will. And I would recognize that what you will is the same as what I wish to have happen as well, and only that. And so I choose to extend love to all of your offspring. The Course in Miracles experiment book by Pam Grout, that lesson 246 is titled, Why the F Word and I Roll Deep. She quotes Mahatma Gandhi as saying, no man could look upon another as his enemy unless he first became his own enemy. Pam writes, most of us think forgiveness is an act we're forced to perform when horrific jerks do us wrong. Forgiveness is realizing that no one has the power to do me wrong. To believe someone or something outside of myself can hurt me is what started all the problems in the first place, and it negates the truth of who I am. Being pissed off unplugs me from the FP, this wild and crazy force that's constantly trying to bless me. It erects a wall between me and my highest good. Believing outside forces can hurt me stunts my growth. It blinds me to all the miracles. It creates an illusory world that makes me want to hide, feel guilty, and close down. Each of us is here to strengthen the life force in ourselves and each other. If we point fingers and believe something outside ourselves can hurt us, we put the squeeze on this unbelievably cool and ever-present life force. Lesson 246 reminds me of the real reason I want to forgive, because I want to be happy. Forgiving, it says, removes strain and fatigue. It takes away fear, guilt, and pain. It makes me invulnerable. But I really like forgiveness because it brings me joy. So, that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes left to have a conversation or to entertain your comments or questions or talk about any topic you might want to suggest related to this work or anything you might have heard in the last 10-plus years of Mind Shifters Radio, or if you've been fortunate enough to participate in a Mind Shifter support group. We had one again last night, and we listened to some vintage Guy Finley. We listened to the CD number 4 from his series of talks titled 7 Steps to Oneness. And it's vintage Guy Finley because he tells stories. And in that one-hour talk, he told 3 separate stories that were all woven together to try to communicate the core of what is essentially the core of every one of his talks, which is the same as what we teach here in Observe for Ourselves Daily with the Reality Management Worksheet and Michael Race's other tools, and that is that the truth of who you are, your higher being, your access to the insight, intuition, the Some people call it the Holy Spirit. Some people call it your unconscious. Some people call it your higher self. But the truth of that, when we are living from that, we don't create the pain and the fear and the sadness and the hurt, the guilt and the shame and the upset and the low self-esteem and the self-hatred. And so whenever we have any of those negative emotions active in us, we could learn, and this is part of what we teach here in this work, to identify that as an alarm system that's most well used to help me understand that my thoughts are in error. There's something about what I'm choosing to focus on and the interpretation I'm placing on those things I'm focusing on, those thoughts, those bits of the totality of life. There's something about it that's creating the upset. And if I wake up and realize I've never experienced an emotion that I didn't personally create, then I can start actively working to dismantle the emotions I experience that I don't find pleasurable. As I do that, I step into a level of perception that allows me a much more accurate picture of what's going on in the world around me and inside myself. And then getting to that awareness of my true nature as this energy of creation expressing in form, some people would call it love, when I'm consciously aware of that, then what I choose to do can only be a reflection of that loving energy, of that creative energy expressing in form. And it can only lead to better and more productive experiences in my life. So we're here to help support that. We're here to help support you in figuring out how to do that more actively and productively and efficiently in every moment and every kind of a circumstance. And we'd love to have your comments or questions or suggestions for topics at 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What would be a productive way to spend some time today? I come into these shows hoping people will have a question or a comment, hoping that someone will suggest a topic, but prepared to talk for the full hour if need be, and holding out the hope that that's somehow useful to people. Sometimes it seems like I'm prattling on, but what I've been doing lately with my time between patient sessions and internet show and support groups is exploring some books. One of them is A Fight to Be, which is a book written by a psychologist who has had the experience of being locked up and told he was insane and forced medication and actually given what they used to call insulin shock treatments, where they would literally induce traumatic experiences in the body by overdosing with insulin and then revive the person and hope their brain was functioning differently in some kind of a bizarre pseudo-scientific methodology that said that's somehow going to help somebody to bring them to near death and shock their brain with insulin, shock their system with insulin, and it will make them more sane. And so he wrote a book about the courage it took to get through that and maintain his sanity, and what it's like now being a psychologist on the other side of that and trying to help people who have similar experiences. And, you know, one of the things that I do as a therapist from time to time is that I recommend that people go and try medication, because if they've tried everything they can think of and everything their friends and family can think of and everything the therapists can think of, and they can't break the cycle of depression or intense anxiety that leaves them almost completely non-functional. Their energy is so low from the depression that if they try medication and it works, it might help them gain enough energy to actually make use of some of the therapeutic techniques that they might encounter in a good therapy. And so, you know, there is a place for the medications that, some of them anyway, that get used in the psychiatric and psychological realm. However, there's also a far bigger pattern of people prescribing and overprescribing without any application of therapy or actual healing modalities, without looking for what's the underlying cause and what might we be able to help this person develop in the way of a sense of purpose in life, a sense of connection to community, an experience of love in their life. What might we be able to help them develop in terms of tools to help them do their own mental emotional hygiene on a daily basis? And so I caution people against this. I recently had somebody that I was working with, and he tried a medication, and the doctor said, "Well, let's do two, since the first one didn't do enough." And then after a while, the doctor said, "Well, let's add a third one." And eventually, the doctor added a fourth medication. So now the patient, mid-20s, on four medications, and reports, "I am, at the end of every day, I'm so depressed and so anxious that I can barely stand it. I can't sleep. I'm not functioning well. It's almost impossible to get any productive work done during the day." So I suggested that they go to their psychiatrist and recommend or ask for a way to start coming off of these medications with medical supervision, slowly, so as to not create a rebound effect, and figure out, you know, which ones of the four should he should start coming off of first and how slowly. And the patient was concerned that they wouldn't know how to communicate that to the psychiatrist, so I literally wrote them a letter talking about what we've discussed, what they're experiencing while they're on four medications, how overwhelmed, how depressed, how anxious, how difficult it is to function during the day, how the sleep isn't working well. And they went to their psychiatrist and came back and reported yesterday that the psychiatrist said that the psychiatrist had listened to the patient, but then told the patient, "Just because you don't think it's working doesn't mean it's not working." And believe it or not, the psychiatrist sent the patient out with a fifth medication and said, "Start taking this and see if that helps. And then if that helps, then we'll consider decreasing some of the other medications." And my comment to that patient was, maybe it's time to get a second opinion, to find another medical doctor who's trained in these things, who might, you know, be able to either verify, "Oh yes, it's really the best thing to do is to add a fifth medication before you come off of any of the other four," or maybe can verify for you that, you know what, there is a different way to go about this, and it's perfectly reasonable to want to come off of some medications if you're already taking four and not seeing any good results. On top of that, there are things that we know about our energy system and about the emotions, the traumatic energies that are trapped in us. There are things that anybody who has used the reality management worksheet that's available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org, anybody who's used that to great effect can tell you that it can change my perception of myself and the world dramatically. And once my perception of myself and the world changes, it powerfully impacts my physical, mental, and emotional functioning. And so if I'm in a state of depression or anxiety and I'm not looking at some tools like Michael Rice's worksheet, the Guy Finley lectures and his tools, Byron Katie's worksheet, the Sedona Release Method, the Ho'oponopono, the Bradley Nelson's Emotion Code book, if I'm not looking at some of these things, I'm not likely to get improvement no matter how many medications I take. We are an energy system. We as human beings are carrying around this energy system. It seems like a physical body, and yet it's all energy. And there are so many different good ways to look at that and to observe for yourself that your body's constantly changing. I mean, look at pictures of yourself from 30 years ago. Look at pictures of yourself if you're in your 20s. Look at pictures of yourself when you were in your single digits. This body that you're in is a flexible, moldable energy system. It's constantly changing. People like Bruce Lipton and Candace Pert talk to us about how the energy that they call chemistry, the energy that they call the genetics and your chromosomes and your genes, and the energy packets that they label these different things are constantly being influenced by the state of mind that each of us adopt. And the energy of the thoughts that we think impacts how our genetics express themselves. This is an entire new field of medicine in the past 30 years that says epigenetics is the name for it. That which is above the genetics, that which activates, turns on or off our genetics. They used to believe that our genetics, simply we were born with them, and that was written in stone, and my genetics, when I got certain chromosomes from mama and certain chromosomes from dad, they were going to create these genes, and they were going to express in certain ways, and that when they turn on, they tell my body to create certain proteins, and when they turn off, they tell my body not to create certain proteins. So from birth, when the sperm and the egg, or in conception, when the sperm and the egg get together, it's all set. I'm going to be this tall. I'm going to lose my hair at this age. I'm going to have this genetic problem. I'm going to have, at this age, I'm going to get cancer, et cetera. That's what they used to believe. And people like Bruce Lipton came to start to study the cell under electron microscopes and realized, you know what? That isn't the truth of it. That there are receptor sites on the membrane of the cell that help the cell read and interpret the energies in the environment, physical, mental, and emotional, and those signals tell the cell how to function and either turn the genetics on or off. And Candace Pert, in her book Molecules of Emotion, talks about how in her studies, she was part of the team that identified the endorphins in the brain that cause runner's high, et cetera. And then she went on to discover the receptor sites for neuropeptides, which are the energy packets that they call chemicals that communicate to the body when I'm feeling various emotions. And it isn't, there isn't a way to separate out the mind energy that I choose and focus on and the impact on my body, because it's all just energy, and all energy is in motion, and all energy affects all the other energies that they interact with at some level. So if we think enough, if we pour enough of our mind energy into a pattern of thoughts that's associated with anger, long enough, we begin to feel the physical manifestations of the anger. We begin to feel the muscle tension, the constriction of blood flow, the either shallow breathing or holding the breath. We begin to experience the physical manifestations that go along with the energies that come from these things we call neuropeptides that flow through the bloodstream and tell the cells in my body how to act when Tim is thinking thoughts of anger. When I do that long enough, I create an environmental factor that is directly influencing how my genetics function, how they express themselves for good or not so good. And this is one of the critical things that before people like Candace Pert and Bruce Lipton and other researchers, before they did this work, the Western science, Western medical science, had no idea that this was actually the way things worked. So it's relatively new knowledge in medical science, and what that means is we have medical doctors who are out and they're practicing in the world, and they have no idea of this because they weren't trained by doctors who had been taught that in medical school. And those are the ones who are in medical school. They're now teaching other medical. So it's going to have to be, unfortunately, maybe another couple generations before this new absolute knowledge of the way our system works gets taught in medical schools. I like to use the example of Dr. Jody Skillicorn. She went and got her medical training and did her residency for psychiatry, and she was thrilled to be out and have her license, and she was out there practicing, and she had her prescription pad, and she'd been taught that you interview people and you find out their list of symptoms, and then you pick the proper medication and you send them on their way, and they come back and you talk to them about how the meds are working or not working, and either add another medication or increase or decrease the medication, and that's how you do psychiatry. And then she got out of medical school, and somebody gave her the book Anatomy of an Epidemic by Robert Whittaker. And she told me, I interviewed her, and she told me she was shocked to read the solid research that's there about how ineffective most of these medications are and how many complicating effects they create for people and how eventually the longer people take these medications, the more it impairs their cognitive functioning. That none of that research was shared with her when she was in medical school. And yet it's published research, it's good science, and it's out there. And when she read that, she realized she could not in good conscience do what her medical training had taught her to do in psychiatry. And she had to go get additional training in things that would actually help people heal and then start practicing that in her medical practice. And she wrote the book, it's either Treating or Healing Depression Without Medication. And she's learned a number of different holistic, integrative, functional medicine approaches, and that is what she works with people in her psychiatrist practice these days. And it's just one example, and people have them all over. If you go to research Dr. Mark Hyman, or if you go to onbeing.org, and search for the words in their podcast list, search for the words functional medicine and or Mark Hyman. You can listen to an hour interview with Dr. Hyman, Dr. Goodman, and Penny, somebody. And each of these three people had medical problems that were so intense that the conventional allopathic medical model ran out of anything to even try to help them. There was nothing, and they were told, nothing we can do for you. And two of these people are medical doctors, so, you know, they're in the group. They're in the in crowd. They should have access to the most recent and the most effective and efficient stuff. And yet they were told, there's nothing we can do. And those two doctors and that philanthropist woman found a way to get healing initiated in their life and then create their own clinics. And there's an interview with Krista Tippett interviewing these three people that's highly educational and can help you understand why we promote things like the reality management worksheet and the EFT tapping and what Michael calls still point breathing and the targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter tool. We promote this even when people are talking about physical aches and pains, because the body is an energy system and the mind and the body are not in any way separate. And if I'm having a physical ache or pain, it is strongly influenced by my mental emotional processing, and I probably have traumatic energy stored in my body that is getting resonated and making the experience of the physical pain worse, or is using up a lot of my mental emotional energy, which means there's less energy available to my immune system to do the healing that I so desperately want to have happen. So the body and mind are part of an energy system. When I have an ache or a pain, when I have a negative emotion, the very best use of that is as an alarm system to wake me up to the fact that something is out of whack in my energy system. And if it's out of whack long enough in my mental and emotional energy system, it will probably show up as a physical ache or pain or an actual disease process that the medical profession will find in some lab results, blood work or something, and say, oh, look, you've got the X, Y, or Z disease. And for thousands of years, healers have known that aches and pains physically are related to mental, emotional imbalances in the energy system, whether it's through the acupuncture meridians, acupressure meridians, or, you know, the way these energies innervate the different organs. And knowledge of this work can free up the energy in me to flow where it's supposed to flow the way it's supposed to flow. And when the body is restored to balance, the body does the healing that it always wants to do, that is needed. You know, some of the best healers in the world will, you know, give you a talk, give you a lecture about how they don't do any healing. The body, the energy system of the person that's in pain is what heals. And all the true healers are doing is facilitating the energy flow, whether it's mental or emotional energy flow or the physical energy alignment of the spine, et cetera, or supplying the nutrients, which are basically just energy packets that the body needs to function in a certain way. And it's the body and the internal inner wisdom, innate wisdom in the body that produces healing, not some external magical force. So in alignment with all of that, we offer the Reality Management Worksheet. and the targeted journaling tool called the Mind Shifter, and a host of other tools, and ongoing active support in using them, as well as a 10-plus year archive of shows that talk about that at length. So we're here with that purpose in mind. We intend to be of service. How can we be of service to you? 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and we can have a conversation. What's your comment? What's your question? What's your answer for today? What's a topic suggestion? I am actively looking for and accepting suggestions about interviews. This week alone, I've been given a lead for Brad Yates as an interview and Dr. Bradley Nelson, who wrote The Emotion Code, as an interview, and a couple of others that I'm tracking down with the hope of having them agree to be interviewed either for Mind Shifters Radio or the On Your Mind podcast, which is available on absolutely free, another wonderful resource. JourneysDream.org/podcast. So, give us a call. Let us know. Who do you think we should interview? What's a good book you think we should read? Who's a podcast you love to listen to that you think would be of value? We had somebody in our support group last night that struggles quite a bit with issues around coronavirus and vaccinations and no vaccinations and government scams and dishonesties, and we mentioned the Byron Katie at Home, or At Home with Byron Katie is the name of her podcast. And we mentioned that her podcast number 17 is just an excellent example of the work. She's working with somebody where the topic that particular person wanted to talk about and do the work on, question his thoughts about, is the topic of vaccination or no vaccination. And I highlight for people, that's not the issue. The issue could be, hey, should I buy a Ford truck or a Chevy truck, right? Everybody in my family has Fords, but I really like the look of the Chevy, and I'm afraid that if I buy the Chevy truck, my family is going to, you know, be angry with me or disown me. It's the same thing. So the actual topic is irrelevant. But the process of learning to question every thought I hold that generates a negative emotion, to my eye and ear, is very similar to the process that Dr. Michael Rice outlines in his worksheet that says, I hold these thoughts, they're generating these emotions, my mind is telling me it's the responsibility of this or that person or situation, and in order for me to be better, I need this to happen, this is my goal, and I cancel the goal. I step into the questioning. What if that's not what's really causing my upset? What if I cancel my need to be right and ask to be shown the hidden part of my mind? What can I learn about my own internal dynamics, which are the only things that will ever cause my emotions? And in that 1 hour, it's a little less than 1 hour before she starts talking to somebody else, Byron Katie is working with this gentleman, helping him question all of the thoughts he has, all the beliefs that he's pouring energy into that result in him feeling unhappy, unpleasant, tense, nervous, anxious, sad, scared, etc. And it's a wonderful set of tools. Some people prefer it to the Guy Finley work or the Ho'oponopono or the Michael Rice work. And this is why we keep talking about these things. When they're in alignment, when they really work, truly work, they're basically just different forms of everything else that truly works. And, you know, the essence of my suffering mentally and emotionally, as Guy Finley would say it, is derived from a misapplication of my conscious mind energy. And that is so similar to what Krishnamurti and David Bohm came to when they understood that there is a fundamental flaw in the process of human thought. There is a fundamental flaw in the attribution of cause and effect within the human mind. And this is what David Bohm calls sustained incoherence. What's at the root of sustained incoherence being an unproductive endeavor is that there's a flaw in the process of thought when it's applied to my mental and emotional upset. And for David Bohm, sustained incoherence means using this flawed process in a way that creates pain or suffering, and then thinking, if I just use it even more, I can end the pain or suffering. And the silliness of that is that if I do something that creates pain and suffering, doing more of it is never going to end the pain or suffering. So, Byron Katie, or At Home with Byron Katie, is the podcast. Her number 17 is a powerful example. I haven't listened to any of the others. There are probably several others there that where the topic may be less triggering than the topic of, you know, vaccination or no vaccination. But you know, there are now 18 episodes that are listed, and so take your pick. I'm sure if it's Byron Katie in person discussing it with someone, it's probably a very good example of the work. And the work is that one way or another, I learned to understand that if I'm in pain, I'm in error, that my thoughts are in error. And if I keep pouring my mind energy into the thoughts that I used to create my pain or suffering, I'm only always and forever going to create more pain and suffering. I have to find a way to do something new, do something differently, to question everything I think I know and ask to be shown, step into the willingness to be taught by life, by a higher level of wisdom and knowledge, connection and integration of energies. I've got to be willing to give up everything I think I want. A Course in Miracles would say to open a curtain in my practice, put aside everything I think I want, my trifling treasures put away, and when I do that, I leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come, or for a more integrated expression of divine intelligence to come into my awareness. This is very much what the book An Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner talks about, and says that there's no actual thought happening in a human mind until the human being realizes the presence of the divine mind within it. No actual thought is happening for a human being until that human realizes that it is a spark of the divine mind and the divine mind is present in it. This is, to my mind, eye and ear what Michael Rice talks about when he says, most people don't do any thinking. They're just constantly having past content resonated into activity through the law of resonance. His tongue-in-cheek way of saying it is, if most people said what they thought, they'd be speechless because they don't do any unique thinking. Most people don't actually use their spiritual faculty of true perception and will, and they're just constantly having past content resonated, and they have been taught to believe that's the same as thinking, when in actuality it's a mechanical level of consciousness. In Guy Finley's words, it's just what gets resonated. by life experience or the way I interpret life experience. And unless I can break out of that cycle and tap into some higher source, some higher integrated intelligence or experience, my perception remains so limited and distorted that I'm simply not able to break out of the unproductive patterns. I just keep doing the same thing over and over again, experiencing results I don't like and blaming it on the world around me. So we're offering an invitation. Come along with us. Learn to question everything you think you know. Choose to practice living from direct observation. Let yourself, through the actual application of living from direct observation, let yourself awaken to how much more useful that is than the practice we've been taught of living by belief. Because belief is basically old, dead thought. It's living in the past. And you don't even have to be Jethro Tull to know that that's not so useful. Musical references, every once in a while they slip out. But look it up, Jethro Tull, living in the past. Even these rock musicians know it's not so useful. So, 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? What would be a good way to spend 10 or 12 minutes prior to the weekend to give you the potential to live a healthier, happier, more joyful, long weekend experience? You know, I was talking to somebody earlier today about the prevalence of so many different techniques that people tout as the way and the powerful, almost miraculous way to help people. And I've talked about this before. This one woman I know is a therapist, and she went to this online training right after the coronavirus restrictions hit. And it was so powerful. People on that call, and they're doing it through Zoom, right? So the people aren't even in the same room. But people were using this technique, and they were getting phenomenal results. Clearings, healings, whatever you want to call it. And the therapist came to me and said, how does this happen? So many times I go to these trainings, and I see it work so well. I see these people that get these phenomenal results, and then I go home in my own practice, and I get some good results, but then, you know, lots of mediocre and not so useful results. And I talked about the phenomenon of willingness and of the levels of screening that happen prior to somebody ending up in one of those seminars. And it was quite enlightening for her. It's, you know, one of the things that the Way of Mastery talks about repeatedly, that you need a smidgen of willingness. You need, the old scriptures would say, you know, faith, you know, as little as a mustard seed, and you can get results that will rock your world. So a smidgen of willingness is needed. But if you've got more than a smidgen, that's great, because the more willing you are, the more deep and profound and more quickly you're going to get results with whatever tool you're using. And I believe the mechanism behind that is the fact that this thing that we call the unconscious is simply part of what we've lived through, part of our consciousness, that some part of us has decided is too intense for us to handle on our own. And that means whenever it comes close to the surface or has enough energy added to it that it might become conscious, some part of me says, Tim, do not look at this. Tim, you can't handle this memory. You can't handle living and being consciously aware of this experience. Well, if a part of my mind is saying I can't handle it, don't look at it, that means a part of my mind is not willing. So my willingness factor goes way down when fear, pain, sadness, hurt from the past gets resonated. And if I'm not willing, it doesn't really matter how good the technique is. Now, this is different than my believing the technique will work, right? Because there are a lot of people that say, hey, this is a powerful technique, and it works even if people don't believe in it. One of those is EFT tapping. There are lots and lots of people who don't believe in it, but, you know, they've, you know, reached the desperation point where someone will, you know, they'll be at a seminar or somebody will say, hey, you know, turn on Brad Yates on YouTube and tap along with him. And even though they don't really believe in it, it sounds really hokey, they can get results. So the willingness I'm talking about is not the same as belief. The willingness I'm talking about is a willingness to see what I'm hiding from myself. It's a willingness to be uncomfortable as I look with openness at whatever bubbles up when I try the technique, whatever the technique is, whether it's the reality management worksheet or brain spotting or the emotion codes or Byron Katie's work. My willingness to see what I've been hiding from myself is a prerequisite to, you know, full healing. And to whatever degree I'm not willing, my mind will be able to shut down and block out any good effects that might be coming my way based on any technique. I think one of the ways they talk about it in the Way of Mastery Q&A is they say, listen, free will cannot be usurped. Your creator gave you this energy system and this awareness, this ability to be aware. And it, your creator gave you this awareness, that's the best word I can come up with it, and this intelligence and free will. And it can't be taken from you by anyone or anything. So if you are not willing to see and feel and hear and experience so that you can sort out and move through any past trauma or any false belief, there is not a force in the universe that we know of that can force you to look at it. And if you're not willing to look at it, you can't see what's happening. You can't, as A Course in Miracles would say, you can't dissolve the effects of your errors in thought because you're not willing to look at them. But as soon as I become willing to look at my errors in thought, and as soon as I see all the way through to the original error in thought, all of the negative effects of that thought are dissolved. So we're encouraging people to understand that willingness to apply the tools, and whichever tool fits your style and personality, and willingness to apply it soon and often to make the mental emotional hygiene, the working with your mental and emotional processes, every bit as common as you work with your physical processes. So you take a bath, you wash your hands, you wash the food you have before you eat it. That's that physical hygiene. If you can step into a willingness to use that level of energy and whatever tools fit your style and personality for your mental and emotional hygiene on a daily basis, your life will get better in ways you could not imagine prior to doing work like that. And that's what we're here to support with a specific set of tools, including the Reality Management Worksheet, the Mind Goal Management Sheet, the Three Early Memories of Conflict, the codependence to interdependence worksheet, the mind shifter targeted journaling tool, the getting the stress you need, which is the mind goal management sheet. The responsibility communication tool, which is a way to get very clear about how I'm the one creating my upset and strengthen my awareness that I truly want to heal. That the whole purpose of that tool is for me to heal my negative emotions. And if I'm clear about that and I work to communicate that to somebody else, I can improve my situation even if the other person doesn't have any desire to support me or work collaboratively with me in that process. So all those tools and more are available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Go there. Click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. Go to the next page and download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Download the worksheet, print it off and do a few of them. Go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. You can carry that app with you everywhere you take your smartphone. And give it. Yeah, the good college try, as my dad would say, and let us know what your experience is. Email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org, and we'll address your comments or questions in the show, and they'll be available in the archive. Alternatively, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And there's another hour of the show coming up with probably Michael and Jeannie and maybe Michelle and Michael. We never know until it happens. That's the nature of this random universe. Anything can happen and oftentimes does. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. Blessings.
Thanks. Bye. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, and it's September the 3rd, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get tuned in, I will invite you again to go to the website that Dr. Tim just mentioned, and it's why again, whyagain.org. And there's lots of information out there. We are still making some changes on the website, so if you run across something that the URL isn't working or there's something that you would like to be set up differently so that you could find it easier or whatever, drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And let me know, and I'll see what I can do about getting it fixed. I'm still working on the shopping cart, and we're still working on being able to send newsletters out through the website. Haven't got those features set up yet, but we will be sending out a newsletter here shortly through our current Constant Contact, letting you know about some things that are going on, and we hope that you join us. One of the things is that we're going to be doing Mind Shifters and Steel Point Breathing, and we're going to do it once a month if we have people sign up for it. And the first one is scheduled for October the 9th. We're going to do it as an all-day workshop instead of as Friday and Saturday. And it will be from 10 in the morning to approximately 5 in the evening. If once you've registered, and the cost for the day is $125. I think Michael's coming up with some specials to offer on it. But once you've registered, then we will set up for you to do the Mind Shifter ahead of time, and then we'll go right into processing and then the Still Point Breathing on that Saturday. If everything continues as we hope, it will be the second Saturday of each month, and that will get us through November and December without hitting the holidays, so that'll work out good. And so we hope that you join us for that. And Michael should be dialing in any second. If you have a question or a comment, please press 1. We would much prefer this show to be what you would like to talk about instead of a monologue from us. And so, you know, what's your question? What can we support you with? Or, you know, what would you like us to discuss? Head us in a direction that would serve you, because that's what this show is about. It's support for you. And so we would love to hear from you. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. We are honored that we get to play with you again. And we had a conversation with Doug yesterday at the end of the show, and he's going to be calling back in again. But I just want to share a thought or two from A Course in Miracles. And, you know, we described yesterday the core of the forgiveness process as being the canceling of goals and recognizing that goals are what drive perception. And so in the chapter on chapter 8, The Journey Back, The Body as Means or End, there's an interesting paragraph there that says this: you might well ask how the voice of something that does not exist can be so insistent. Have you thought about the distorting power of the way you want it to be? The power of something you want, even if it is not real. There are many instances of how what you want distorts perception. No one can doubt the ego's skill in building up false cases. And, you know, the temptation to believe what your mind tells you based in hostility or fear is overwhelming. And the one thing you can be assured of is 100% of the time, when your mind is showing you a picture, feeding you a perceptual construct that is accompanied by hostility or fear, the one thing you can be assured of is that that perceptual construct is fake. It's based on corrupt data. It's false. It's lying to you. And it's driven by the way you want it to be. So all you have to do is feed the ego's mind. And when we talk about the ego mind, we're just talking about the database, the multi-generational database called a body-mind unit that has information stored from generation upon generation upon generation. You know, there's an interesting passage if you go back into the ancient scriptures. And again, looking at this not as theology, but as physiology, as fact, as simply the way it works. And you hear this conversation in the ancient scriptures where the creator, pardon me, ostensibly is talking to Satan. And the creator says, Satan, from whence come you? And Satan says, from going to and fro upon the earth, from going back and forth upon it. Now, what is to and fro, back and forth, but a statement of the past? It's not about being out on a physical walk on the planet. It's that we accumulate information, we store it in our cellular structure, and that's called memory. And memory, like perception, as the Course says, is a skill made up by us, place of what the Creator gave us in creation. And so the beauty of the perceptual system is that the Creator built in a warning system for telling you when you're generating a pained reality, and your mind will always have a conversation about what somebody else is doing, about how it's all about them. And until you shift that conversation to yourself, you can't get to true perception. You can't dump the corrupt data, because the corrupt data will keep feeding you falsehoods and lies. And that's all in the effort to protect ourselves, to play the game that, no, it's not my fault, I bear no responsibility here. And so, again, there are many instances of how what you want distorts. No one can doubt the ego's skill at building up false cases. And so the objective here becomes to be willing, where false perception exists, where hostility or fear exists, to enter into forgiveness, to identify the specific way you want it to be. And sometimes it can seem difficult to get to the way you want it to be. Well, gee, I'm not sure what my goal is. Well, actually, it's pretty simple. If you were to describe to this person that you're now blaming the ideal output, the ideal end result of this situation, what would be the ideal end result? Well, I just want them to, you know, honor me and cherish me and hold me in the highest esteem and love. Okay. So now you know that the goal you need to cancel is the goal to be held in honor and high esteem and to be loved. And when you cancel that goal, the perception based in memory that the ego feeds you and says, ah, see, this is the problem. They're not holding you in high esteem and whatever the goals are. And to me, the genius of this man, Yeshua, and there are only two places on the planet where I've found this exact and specific technology. Oh, there are technologies out there that lead you to question, is that really true? But you can know, you can say to yourself, well, it's not really true. But if I don't remove the underlying energy, it's going to sneak back into perception again, again, and again, and again. What you want to do is get to the root of that pained perception and remove the underlying energy, literally the memory. And so as Jeannie shared yesterday in the lesson, and thank you, Jeannie, for looking that up. I had been holding that the perception is a skill made up by you came from the lesson on what is the world. And I was mistaken there. It is from the lesson on the undoing of fear. And in the introduction, chapter 28, it says this: the miracle does nothing. And interestingly enough, once you've cleaned up and healed your mind, miracles are part of the illusion. They'll disappear too. They're of no use. They're not needed where error does not exist. So the miracle does nothing. All it does is to undo. So remember how many times we said, you know, the Greeks will tell you, oh, that person over there is the cause of your pain, and all you have to do is let them off the hook. No, the cause of your pain is the fact that you hold somewhere hidden in you, maybe from generations ago, the dynamics, the memory of pain. And when that's resonated into activity, if you're living in denial, remember our definition of denial is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, then I'm in denial. When I speak or think as though that which is outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, then I have to hide or dissociate from the cause of what's moving inside of me. Now that I've dissociated from it, and you know, if you were around this work in the early days, you'll probably remember the thousand times that I wrote on the board, deny, suppress, project. That was, you know, the kind of the key line in the workshop, why is this happening to me again, for 3 decades. And literally one day in meditation, I was told specifically and directly to get rid of that word suppress, because it isn't suppression. You know, suppression's kind of this thing, well, you know, it's suppressed, but there you go, you just pulled it up and there it is. No, it's not suppression. It's dissociation. And dissociation means this is no longer mine to access directly. This I have stored in memory. And no matter what I do, no matter how much I want to see it, no matter how much I want to reclaim it, no matter how much I want to own it, no matter how many times I say, oh, yes, I want to see that, I've dissociated from it. It's not mine to hold anymore. It's gone, out of sight. And then that particular energy pattern that I've dissociated from, the simple act of dissociating from it, I've pressed energy into it, which means that the resultant frequency that radiates from me, that carries information about what I've dissociated from, has become intensified. It has strengthened. And now somebody, probably somebody close enough to me to be willing to kind of take the rap, is going to do the behavior that's going to resonate that which I've dissociated from. If I stay in denial and dissociation, then that very information that their behavior bounces off of and therefore resonates in me, I'll use that information to build my brain's image of them. It's called projection. So following the cycle, deny, dissociate, and then project. So now I use that very information to build my brain's image of them. They show up in my mind with my problem attached, and I swear, and I talk about them, and I know it must be their problem. But as you've heard me say 1,000 times, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If they're the one with the problem, why am I the one hanging up the phone? If they're the one with the problem, why am I the one that's irate and agitated and upset? Because what they've done has been their generous response to my call for that dissociated content, that memory, to be shown to me and get it close enough to where I can at least apply forgiveness and start to access it directly in myself. When I access it directly, and the way I access it directly is by collapsing the projection, which keeps me in indirect relationship with that pain. I'm in pain, but it's because you did this. Well, now I've put my pain into my brain's image of you, and I'm indirectly now, through my brain's image of you, through my perceptual construct of you, I'm experiencing that memory as something about you. And while I'm experiencing as something about you, obviously I can't reach into myself and change it. I'm dissociated from it. But the genius of this man, Yeshua, said, here's what you do in that case. You find the exact and specific, the precise, the most precisionally aimed goal that you have in that circumstance, and you cancel your need for it. Shebag that goal. And when you do, that energetic dynamic that you need to face directly, that has been transparently integrated into your brain's image of them, collapses. The whole picture of them collapses when the goal that's driving that perception collapses. And when it collapses in on itself. And if you stand in willingness, you now have access directly to the memory that holds the energetic dynamic that generates the pain. Projection has ended. If you've effectively done step 4, in the forgiveness process, brought love present, and then canceling the goal, allow that underlying energy to surface directly in your mind, now expose to, remember our definition of processing, that is when I bring something forward in the presence of love that is less than love. And I hold to that presence of love. Now I've entered into process work. And the lies, all of the lies that I've ever told myself, I've maybe taken that particular issue and projected it on three different really important people in my life. You know, maybe my dad or my mom and my sister or my first spouse or my second spouse or maybe all of them. But when I collapse, when I cancel the goal and collapse it, I get to bring that energy forward directly in me and realize it's about me, and exposed to love, it dissolves. This is one of the places where responsibility communication comes in. You know, Magda, we thank you, if you're listening to the show, for the powerful work you did in the second Codependence to Interdependence Intensive in tackling the responsibility communication and the process that ensued from that, the opening that occurred from that, is so vital to understand and embrace. So anybody that has been part of the intensive, you might want to go back and listen to that again and the follow-up session with Magda on that. It's so profoundly powerful. Because when we language the truth, when I own, rather than when I say, you caused me pain, when I can say, pain has been aroused in me, my pain has surfaced, or even you did a behavior that resonated my pain, when I'm giving my mind permission to show me that it's my pain, I'm now edging toward the place where I can access that part of my mind directly, and that's the key. You know, I can go back about 30 or so years ago and remember when I was puzzling over what's the key? What is it that causes healing to happen? And healing doesn't happen if you figure out the mind is lying to you. That isn't healing. That's going, I can push that reality aside, but it's not accessing the underlying dynamic that needs to be healed. Healing happens when love is conscious, active, and present. And that which is less than love, rather than being projected into my brain's image of someone else, or even into my brain's image of my own body, rather than projecting it there, I'm able to bring it forward directly. So what was shown to me, what became very clear, and as I've observed it over the years, two things happen when healing occurs. Love, either the individual doing the healing work or someone supporting them, is holding to conscious, active, present love. And that energy that is less than love, and it can be profoundly painful to touch into those memories. That's why we hide them from ourselves through denial. But when I allow that part of my mind to come forward directly in the presence of, I don't have to do anything about it. Because the active presence of love dissolves that which is not love, that which is not accurate or true, energetically. And when you engage in the first century forgiveness process, and rather than you're trying to process through this perception that has this projection, and you're trying to figure it out, and you're trying to fix it, and you're trying to fix them, and if only they would change, then everything could be okay. The goal is never reached there. You can't figure it out. It's the canceling of the goal that collapses the projection that allows direct access to the dissociated content. And when the dissociated content is breathed forward, when the breath continues to move, and it comes forward in the presence of love, its dissolution occurs. And that's where this particular lesson from the Course, the miracle does nothing. All it does is to undo. And thus it cancels out the interference to what has been done. It does not add, but merely takes away. Remember how many times we've said forgiveness is removal? And what it takes away is long since gone, but being kept in memory, appears to be have immediate effects. This world, the world of false perception, was over long ago. The thoughts that made it are no longer in the mind that thought them and loved them for a while. The miracle shows the past is gone, and what has gone has no effects. Remembering a cause can but produce illusions of its presence, not effects. All the effects of guilt are here no more, for guilt is over. In its passing went its consequences, left without a cause. Why would you cling to it in memory if you did not desire its effects? Remembering is as selective as perception. Past tense. It is perception of the past as if it were occurring now and still were there to see. Memory, like perception, is a skill made up by you to take the place of what the Creator gave you in creation. And like all things you made, it can be used to serve another purpose. And can be the means for something else. It can be used to heal and not to hurt, if you so wish. Thank you, Yeshua, for that insight, for that understanding, and for those tools. So profoundly powerful. So little bits of genetic junk called memory hang around from generation to generation. They come forward, and people call those things thoughts. And they think they're thinking those thoughts and are unaware that when they engage in that mind energy, they're engaging in a creative process. That then precisely reproduces the patterned generational experiences that everybody says they want to be finished with. If we never learn to actually forgive, to go into and access the part of the mind that holds these memories, this data, these bits of information, then when those bits of information move through resonance, we create out of them. If we never learn to go in and clean that part of the mind up, then what happens is you get to live the title of my book. Why is this happening to me again? And it's a powerful piece of work to be willing to let all of that go and shift back to your design, which is the full physiological presence in every cell of your structure of love. My offering is that's what we're designed for. And that's what we're here to learn, to teach, and to understand. And so, Miss Jeannie, I didn't know that's where I was going to go, but that's where I went. So has Doug called in? Is his hand up? And my apology, Doug, for
his hand,
having you hang there so long if you are.
He is on. He didn't put his hand up, so I'm going to turn on his microphone and see if he wants to talk. Hi, Doug.
Hi there.
Hey there, good sir.
Yep.
How do you be?
Here.
I didn't know I was going to do that when I opened the show. It was just like, well, I'd been doing some research in the course, and there it was. So, okay, let's go for it. And one thought led to another, and thank you.
Yep. Well, it was all perfectly appropriate, you know, relevant.
A conversation you're ready for?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the only obvious thing to strive for, look towards, try and do, work on, create. So, yeah, I'm still low energy physically. I'm in recovery from something, and I feel tremendous resistance. You know, still awake in me. It's like I don't want. There's a certain level of reluctance to accept it. I want something other than what seems to be happening, and you know, I feel like it brings up a lot of non-being content about, oh, that's terrible, this is the worst thing that could happen, that sort of thing.
Well, again, remember that line, the distorting power of the way I want it to be.
Yeah.
And,
well,
you know, one of the thoughts that comes is yesterday you were saying, you know, that Diane wants to move away from the relationship. And the question that comes to mind to ask is, are there some goals that she has for you that, one, she might be willing to cancel and really let loose of and process through, and or that you could step into the space of going, oh, I can fulfill that goal. Sure, I can do that. And, you know, that's another way to get the non-being mind to quiet down and maybe enter into another level of process. So are there requests being made of you that you're in resistance to that really wouldn't be that big a deal to go, well, sure, I can do that. Sure, I can be in goodwill and cooperation with you on that.
Well, from my perspective, I certainly understand that she has certain goals that are perfectly justifiable, and she's tired of waiting for them, and she feels like, she doesn't have a lot of faith in any outcome that looks like what she wants. Sufficiently close to what she wants, I think. And so
So is there anything you can do that can open the space for her to have confidence in those things coming to fruition? Good breath. Sounded like a wiggle.
I am willing to do everything that I am able to do to try and help that to happen. However, I don't want to make excuses. You know, I don't know what to say. It's like I feel like I have been doing the best I can under the circumstances that have been evolving in my life, and that
you might want to look at that little piece of regulatory speech that came in there. First response was, I don't want to make excuses. And you might want to look at and do some work on the parts of your mind that are saying to you, well, what I really have are some excuses.
Sure. Well,
but let me offer them as facts, and then I won't be making excuses, I think. Maybe.
I'm not clear what that means, Michael.
Well, I'm just offering that as I asked the question, are there some things you could do that would fulfilled some of those goals, or at least, as you said, she wants some reasonable indication that there will be fulfillment. And one of your first responses was to say, and I'm just listening to your speech and feeding it back to you, and it's telling us there's a part of your unconscious, I would offer, that's saying you've got some excuses. As you say, I don't want to make excuses. That was one of your first automatic responses. And so I'd offer that you might want to delve into that part of your unconscious that maybe has made some excuses for yourself or for someone else in your life and clean that up and see if that opens another space.
Okay. Yeah.
What thought went with that breath?
Well, I just wrote down clean up excuses. You know, I feel like
are you breathing?
Yeah, I think so.
I want to acknowledge you, Doug, for the vulnerability that you've had on this show over the years and opening things up.
Sure. You know, I know that the reasons or the experiences that have occurred, the things that have been on my path, could be called excuses, you know, and I my experience to this point has been that I really did the best I could. I don't feel like I was looking for things to be an excuse to not take action at the level that was within my capability under the circumstances. And at the same time, you know, I recognize that one can always do something more. One can always do something different, you know, so I don't want to,
right.
I'm willing to recognize that. And I wrote up what I hoped for as a path forward towards achieving these goals. And gave it to her, and you know, at this point, I mean, she said that at some point she will, when she gets time, write down her feelings more clearly for me, but I feel like she's admittedly overwhelmed and has many, many issues on her plate, all of which are really big and difficult for her with, you know, and at this point, it appears the best information we can gather from her, always subject to a possible change, you know, in the next couple weeks or whatever, but her direction of travel right now is that she doesn't believe that she wants to continue to invest in this and, you know, accept his friendship.
Is there a specific goal that would follow that up with, I don't want to invest in this because this isn't happening? Is there something specific that you'd be willing to explore or that would be worth exploring?
Well, the two main unsatisfactorily fulfilled goals, the first most unsatisfactory fulfilled goal is that she wants more financial contribution from me. She wants to feel like I'm earning more money and able to contribute to the relationship in a way that is supportive to our mutual goals more effectively. And I don't think that's
as I recall,
a reasonable goal. What?
That's a pretty old goal. That's an old conversation that's been going on, hasn't it?
It's been going on.
Seems I can recall back 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago even.
Yes.
So is there something you can do to take that load off her plate? I mean, if you just simply said, okay, I'm going to look in the paper in one end, and I'm going to look for a job that's out there that will create a decent cash flow. And as I understand it, it's been a challenge to, you know, create cash flow out of the work you really want to do in the healing realm. So would it be reasonable to say, to take that goal off of her plate? Well, you know, maybe it's just the grocery store. You know, they're paying $15 an hour now. And so I'm going to do that until I can bring the financial end of my healing work forward sufficiently to match that. It seems like that might be a reasonable way to take that off of her plate and give you a way to make that contribution. Is that a sensible direction to go?
Sounds like I'm arguing against something, and I desire other than that. But my experience is that I expressed a willingness to do that, and she said that she didn't think that it was a good idea. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's like it's too late. It's like at this point, that would be too little, too late, because $15 an hour is not the kind of financial contribution I think that she wants, and it would also, within my own being, of course, and she understands this, probably a pretty big distortion of my purpose, and therefore disruptive to my purpose, because the energy required to do that would so limit any leftover energy for my purpose that it would be pretty destructive to my purpose. That's the consciousness that I have about that, but I'm willing to do that. You know, mm-hmm. I express a willingness to do that. So
maybe stepping forward and just doing it might be another level, and my offering, and I can remember, you know, I can go back to when I was in the business world and I decided I was going to move into the healing world. And I can remember going back to school and I was starting to teach, to go back and studying naturopathy. And actually I was studying law at the same time, because that was part of my purpose, and ended up leaving the study of law to move into laws of living, you know, moved it into a different venue. But I can remember being in Atlanta and really knowing this was not my purpose. And back then, I think I was making about $7 an hour for going up on roofs with hot tar and tarring those roofs for a roofing company, so that I could, you know, I was doing an exchange for the apartment that I lived in, so that I could put food on the table and pay my tuition. I was doing roofing in Atlanta at, you know, 98% humidity and a, you know, 95 degrees and hot tar. And it sure wasn't my purpose, but I can remember that was one of the things that, you know, walked me through what I needed to do in order to keep my life together and keep my kids fed while I was learning to teach in a way that empowered me to break through why teaching healing and spiritual work kept me in poverty. Because ultimately, that's what I had to do, was clean up that piece, the part of me that believed, you know, I'd been in, you know, I had Mark III on one side of my driveway and El Dorado on the other. I had businesses in three different cities and didn't make a lot of money, but rocked through and spent a lot of money. But when I decided to go into, when I chose to go into the work of healing and spiritual work, I realized that I had a belief. I had a chunk of mind energy that you had to be in poverty to do that. And I, you know, for about 7 years, I lived in that kind of poverty doing this work. And I can actually remember the very, like, literally the minute. And I can tell you almost to the inch exactly where I was on the face of the earth when that turned around. And I was able to let loose of the mind energy that doing spiritual work and healing work meant poverty.
Right.
And maybe that piece might be helpful in seeing, well, maybe there's a piece of work for me there to do while I do what I need to do to keep my relationships and body and soul together. And that the real work that needs to be done is that what holds away success in the venue that you perceive to be your purpose.
I'm sure all these are very valid aspects of healing that need to occur and that would be useful to occur. The pivotal piece here is, am I going to continue to spend time or live in Minnesota with her, you know, as friends while I endeavor to do such a thing, which I'm advocating for, but she doesn't want to do? Or am I moving here to St. Louis and then I can do, you know, any or all of these things? And there's nothing stopping me from doing that. You know, I mean, it's not like I expect that day after tomorrow she's going to, you know, start dating somebody. I mean, I don't expect that. But there are two centers up there, people who run them I know I'd like to make an effort to work in. And I feel like I want to, you know, again, my goals, you know, I would prefer not to have this level of separation. I've already been through 3 years of, you know, very minimal affection between us and, you know, a lot of difficulty in which I have just continuously rewritten my internal scripts to continue to deepen my commitment. But I feel like if I do this, if she asks this and follows through with this, that it really compromises. I mean, the mindset I have in my head anyway is that it compromises our potential future together, and it feels immensely difficult for me, just like a very, very hard thing. I don't really prefer to continue to carry on, you know, under these circumstances. I mean, it's an option, certainly, and in all probability, it is the option I will choose. But I, you know, given the circumstances that are as they are, but they're,
Have you done any specific worksheets on that goal that you just talked about?
To live up there or what?
Well, the whole picture that you're holding in your mind that you'd like to have happen. Have you done any worksheets on those issues, the core of those issues?
Pardon my coughing. I feel like...
It sounds like your body responding, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, there's huge pain there. You know, I mean, immense pain. My pain is that I have to leave and, you know, that I'm failing and that I have failed her and you know, that I don't know if I can, you know, continue to how well I can continue to hold this position and bear up under the circumstances and so on and so forth. I have understanding and compassion for her position, and you know, I way earlier on, like a couple of years ago, you know, I went through layers of anger and upset with her withdrawing and, you know, lack of commitment to us and so on. And I cleared lots and lots of that out. I don't really feel that. I just feel now tremendous sadness, you know, tremendous sorrow and loss. And,
question. How does sorrow and loss look like your life? How does sorrow and loss look like your power person's life? My offering is your sorrow and loss has nothing to do with what's happening in Minnesota or St. Louis. Your sorrow and loss has got to do with what you're carrying around inside of you that needs to be accessed. The memories made up to take the place of what the Creator gave you in creation of sorrow and loss.
Absolutely, no question, Michael. I mean that's where my worksheets have been focused lately, and unfortunately I don't have them in my hand available to me right at this moment but that's what's up, no question. The non-being content that dominates my reality that I forgive and remove is sorrow and loss, and as I've been working with it, you know, it's like I've been in contact with all kinds of sorrow and loss from every time that I've felt sorrow and loss in my life, you know, I mean, just the
right
loss of my, you know, from
remember that there's a dual process here. And part of it is allowing yourself to access and process through those things. And part of it is, in the presence of that sorrow and loss, building your relationship with conscious, active, present love and bringing that into the space. Some meditations where you're focused on what you're perceiving as the pain within Diane and within yourself, the sorrow and loss within yourself in relationship. And as you're holding that, holding it in the space of calling forward and cultivating your relationship with conscious, active, present love. And as that capacity to hold love present increases, and you cancel the goals that are driving the sorrow and loss, then rather than the sorrow and loss being turned into perceptual constructs by your mind and the complexity and the impossibility of working through them seemingly having to be done, by canceling those goals and letting those constructs collapse, constructs that you know so well and are so real, by canceling the goals that drive them and allowing yourself having the strength and the focus and the power to hold love present, while the energetic dynamics beneath those constructs come forward. And that will contribute to the dissolution of the energetic patterns underneath the constructs. And when they're gone, the constructs are gone. And the creation of those dynamics, or making those dynamics over and over and over again, will tend to disappear.
So if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that in addition to processing directly you know, trying to surface and surrender and forgive sorrow and loss constructs, I need to focus on calling forth conscious act of love and holding that presence in my being so that that act will further support the
dissolution.
Dissolution of those things, right?
Yes.
It's not getting
and recognizing that that love is your being.
Okay.
That love is your being. And so calling being into carbon-based memory, focusing and bringing love present there, opens to the next level of dissolution of the underlying generational patterns.
Right.
And I breathe with you.
That's That's basically an expansion of what's, I don't know what step it is, but about step five or somewhere in there in the worksheet, you know, when we're just calling the love in and saying, I invite Wicca to assist me in healing this, right? It's like pulling lots and lots of that love into my being, recognizing that my being's nature is love and inviting that condition of love to be present to help undo these underlying non-being constructs, right?
Yes, yes.
All right.
And when I look back over the years and watch people in healing, the most monumental shifts happen at that moment where somebody, anybody in the space is holding to love, and the core element of that pain comes forward. It's like an instant transmutation that occurs.
All right.
And, of course, the breath is a key component in the whole process. The breath is Rukka, is the presence, opens the full, it's like the opening of the valve when that breath is opened to that flow of love through your structure. That's where the still point process comes in.
Yeah.
And I hold the space for both of you because I've watched you guys together and what you're capable of together. And, you know, when I say to myself, well, I'm capable of this, therefore I'm going to go do this, then everything in me that's unlike that has to come up for healing. And just know that I'm here, Jeannie's here, holding the space for whatever all of that's about. To surface so deeply and profoundly in the presence of a greater depth and profound presence of love so that that dissolution occurs, that forgiveness, that underlying energy. It's let loose.
Right. Yes. Okay.
I'm in South Florida. My kids are 1.5 and 3. I had a house in North Georgia I'd rented and was working on writing, why is this happening to me again? December 24th, the pipes freeze. and we can't stay in the house, and it's going to be weeks before they're fixed. A friend in North Palm Beach, Florida, has been wanting me to come down there, so he's like, come on down, you can stay with me while the pipes are being fixed. And, you know, I've been going to Unity in Lake Worth. I know the minister really well. I'm sure he'd love for you to come and speak. Down there, did that, and we had such a response that the minister in Lake Worth, called the minister in Fort Lauderdale and said, hey, you got to have this guy come down. So I went down and spoke there, did a six-week series, and was planning to come back to North Georgia to finish writing my book. It's the last of the six-week series. I had named the series, you know, weeks before. I just jotted down when they said, would you come and do a series of 6 weeks? I just jotted down a series of titles. And the last title was Still Waiting for Your Ship to Come In. Which one did you send out? I'm driving down I-95. I'm staying up in North Palm Beach. I'm driving down to Fort Lauderdale. It's the last in the series. And tomorrow, I'm putting the kids in the car and driving back to Georgia. I've got about $102 in my pocket. I don't know how I'm going to get food in the fridge and have the gas to get back to North Georgia with the kids so that I can fulfill some commitments I have in Atlanta. But that's what I have to do. My friend who we're staying with is saying, look, Michael, you just got things started here. You can't leave. You've got to stay. It's like, no, I've got a commitment in Atlanta. I've got to go. I'm driving down I-95, and I'm pondering, how am I going to do all this? I'm literally at Hillsborough Boulevard, the Hillsborough exit, and a voice inside my head says, Michael, take the $100 that you got in your pocket, go into a bank and get a $100 bill for it, and give it away at the workshop tonight. To which I said, are you crazy? I got off the interstate, and I got a $100 bill, and I created an exercise where I talked about, you know, the scriptures talk about giving and you get back tenfold, yay, a hundredfold. How much does everybody want back? And, of course, everybody wants $1 million back. I say, okay, well, get out the 10 grand and give it away. Well, let's not go that far. Well, get out what you're willing to give away. Fold it up in a little ball that you can, with your hand closed, pass to another person. I had a $100 bill in my hand, and I started the exercise, and I gave it to somebody. And then we did an exchange. I had everybody in the room stand up. You know, you wrote a check to cash, or you had cash in your hand. You folded it up small enough so nobody could see what it is, and you just passed it. You handed it to somebody else and received what they had in their hand. And you went to the next person, you handed it off, and you received, and you handed it off. We did that about six times. I ended up with a $20 bill. I got in the car. The donations that came out of the workshop that night gave me about another $100. So I've got about $120. And I get back to North Palm Beach. I load the kids in the car. I borrow some money from the friend I'm staying with so I can get back and put food in the fridge. I get in the car to start the car, and the car does nothing when I turn the key. It is dead. My friend has been standing there saying, you got to stay. You can't leave. You're just getting things started here. I unloaded the car, unloaded the kids, made arrangements to fly to Atlanta, and stayed. The next week, I had a full-time practice in South Florida. The next week. And I've never made less than triple anything that I made in the 7 years before that since that day. At what point is this energetic pattern going to shift? I hold the space for it to be soon.
All right.
And the phone's going to cut us off, so if we need to continue tomorrow, I'm wide open, and otherwise we'll hold the space for you,
you mean
for
Monday.
Diane, and for, or Monday, pardon me, yeah, it's Friday already. Time is flying. Holding the space, have an awesome weekend, and blessings. Bye, everybody.
Blessings, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio. with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org.